My name is Ashley, and this is Let's Talk Dispatch.
I do. You're going to do it. Do it really well.
And I believe the world needs more dispatchers.
Around in the mud, blood, and beer.
Years that I'm not working 4th of July. 4th of July.
Hey, community policing, right? What about community dispatching?
So on this show, with the help of my guests, we will educate, empower, and support the heroes behind the headset. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode here on Let's Talk Dispatch with me, Ashley, the Raspy Dispatcher. Hope you guys are having a wonderful and lovely week. We're just inching closer and closer to the holiday time this year when we're recording. And it's, I don't know about for you guys, but I feel like it's been a weird holiday month. I feel like every call I've taken has been a little extra elevated, you know? So I hope we're all checking in with ourselves, checking in with each other, making sure we're doing good, because it's a stressful time of year for many reasons, especially for us first responders who are having to work these holidays when we would much rather be eating food and hanging out with our family. So I appreciate everything that you all are doing, and I am with you. I'm working Christmas Eve and Christmas Day this year, so I hope all that is going well for you folks. My guest today held the position of Chief of Communications Officer with a total of 19 years in law enforcement as a dispatcher, has described herself as a knower of much and master of none. My guest today, Kim. Hey, Kim.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good.
It's always funny for me, like, because secrets out, I talk to you guys before I bring you on, like, live, you know? So yeah. We already, like, had our, like, hi, how are you? And then I had to do it again.
How are you supposed to respond now?
Right, we've never talked up until this very moment.
Never.
Just kidding.
Never.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into public safety, what that looked like for you.
Oh, well, I did not start out my life thinking that this is where I would be. I was going to be a teacher. I was living vicariously through my aunt, and who just was a wonderful teacher. And so I went to college to teach K-12, deaf ed, actually. I was going to teach at one of our local deaf schools, or that was my goal. And, my husband was deployed overseas, and I had a one-year-old at home, and I needed a little part-time job. And one of the girls that I was in class with, she said she was working for City Hall, and she said that their local police department was hiring dispatchers, little part-time dispatchers. So I sat down at their kitchen table and interviewed and was hired on the spot. And the rest is kind of history. It was great. It was simple. It was easy. But that's kind of led me into training and standards. It's kind of my passion. And so my background in education has made me a homeschooling mom, has made me a center training officer. That's just kind of guided what I thought I was going to do is not what I ended up doing, but it's kind of guided me to where I'm at.
Isn't that the funny thing about, like, higher ed, you know, is that you're expected to know at 18, like, what you're going to go out there and study and do. And then 9 times out of 10, I would say everyone's undergrad degree is, like, not related. So what you kind of stumble into, because, you know, life happens, things change. We're not the same person we were when we were 18, you know, so.
Right. That degree is sitting in the cedar chest. It's not even being used. It's helped guide where I'm at now. But a part-time job has kind of led me around, and I decided I loved it. You don't always have to be kind to the parent. You know, when you're a teacher, you have to be kind to the parents. You have the different things. You have to kind of tiptoe around on that. And when you're dealing with the prisoners, you can just say, look, shut up. You don't always have to be sweet and kind. You can be a little snarky and not get fired for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You start being snarky to the 6-year-old, you know, they get a little weird about that stuff.
Right, they do. More the parents. The kids handle it better, but the parents not much. Yeah,
that's great. Well, you said you got hired on the spot. So what did that training look like for you folks at that time? Because I know standards is a passion of yours now. Comparatively, what did those standards look like back then versus today or versus when you were still in the field?
Well, so a little secret, I'm a secondary PSAP. That's my background, not 911. And so I guess my passion actually comes from secondaries are out there and secondaries need the same kind of training as primaries, 911 centers. And so we had, and this is still kind of how it is in these smaller agencies, is a left seat, right seat kind of training. There wasn't a training manual. There wasn't a training, program. It was a left seat, right seat. This is how we do it here. It wasn't even the foundations of dispatch. Mm. And then what that means for us and then what that means for you. There was none of that. It was just, here's our agency. Here's what it looks like. Here's a sheet with some 10 codes on it. Here's, and then within 6 months, you go to your NCIC certification class. And that's kind of been the norm. In the agencies, and that has kind of pushed me towards some more training to be able to set those standards, because a lot of 911 centers do have a training program. They do have a classroom setting. They do have, a shadow setting. They don't necessarily, all of their training is left seat, right seat. And so that's kind of me within the last 5 years, probably to develop a training program for my current agency to have standards, to be able to match some of the training that some of the 911 centers would have. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what it looked like. And you fly by the seat of your pants, trial by fire, whatever.
Drop to the deep end.
Learn how to do it. You'll do it better the next time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You know, I'm a big advocate of the training process, like being able to have that classroom setting and being able to get ingrained slowly that way before hitting the floor, I think is super valuable. But I'm also aware that there's a lot of folks who don't have that luxury in their centers, which is why we're talking about, we need more dispatchers, we need more folks to be willing to do this job. We need more agencies and more states to be able to compensate folks well enough that they want to do this job, provide them with benefits, et cetera. And so, I mean, we can go full circle and unpack all that to be able to say, the more folks we have, the better ability we have to train these people. But I do understand that, for some folks that don't have that option and we're training in the seats, plug in, let's go. How difficult that is, and how sometimes you kind of have to create this unique training experience that can be really tough for CTOs, and it's a tough job to train a new dispatcher. You need good ones, because when you don't have good ones, people leave. Rightfully so.
Right. Well, and having with the smaller agencies, you're not going to have the experience all the time. And it's hard to train in some of these scenarios that you may not experience weekly, monthly, even within the year, And so really advocating for the administration in your department. And so for me, administration means chief of police or lieutenant. And so you're coming from a law enforcement standpoint, and they don't know how to dispatch. They don't know what the dispatch world is like. And so to them, you're just a butt in the seat sometimes to answer the phone or push the button and say 10-4. They don't realize that you need to train to be able to recall something. But not to be perfect, but to at least have exposure to what is out there that anytime the phone rings, you might get faced with. And mm-hmm. because you've never experienced before, and if you've never been trained for exposure, just for recall, you're kind of at a deficit. And so for them to understand the importance of pushing their dispatchers out there for training, to set that fund to the side to pay for training on some of these things. Mm-hmm. And that's been really, really a push that I've done with the administration that I work with recently is, mm-hmm. hey, it's more than just a butt in the seat. And just because we're a small agency, you know, one man show, we don't have each other to fall back on. Mm-hmm. You need to have that kind of exposure to different trainings. Mm-hmm. Suicidal callers, persons with disabilities, how to talk to your rape victim, how to control the scene of your phone call, to mm-hmm. be able to maintain the control of that scene when your officer gets there. Otherwise, they're at a deficit already to mm-hmm. control their scene. Mm-hmm. Different things like that, I think, is important to self-advocate for that, I guess. And yeah. also the administration to get them to be transparent and have them kind of understand that.
I like the language you use when you you described it as maintaining the control of the scene, of your scene as the dispatcher. I think oftentimes the public and ourselves, we feel very separate from mm-hmm. what's going on, you know, on the other side of our phone call, in that we don't always own we know as dispatchers how important our role is, you know, but when we talk about it out there for the public, using words like we are as well maintaining that scene, like we're not just handling a phone call, you know what I mean? And I think right. when you say it that way, it brings back a lot of ownership, and it re-implements that teamwork that we have going on between mm-hmm. us and patrol. When we're talking about law enforcement specifically for us, because we both have done law enforcement. And it's true. I can really escalate or de-escalate.
Yeah, you can make or break it for the officer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you
had asked earlier about what it was like for me in the beginning. When I first started, you know, it was something I needed to supplement our income. It was something for me to do while my husband was deployed. It was mm-hmm. you know, it was something that I needed. But over the time, realizing your worth, realizing your position within the agency, that mm-hmm. while we are together and we are the same, we are separate, but mm-hmm. owning our authority and the position that we play in that game, that yeah. when you answer, and that's why, you know, the whole debate on whether we're first responders or not. Okay, we answer the phone first. We're the first ones who respond to that coming to us. Then that makes you a first responder. Okay, but to me, the making or breaking the scene, mm-hmm. you can de-escalate that situation with your caller, or mm-hmm. you can tick them off by just being very rote and not having any. Obviously, we have questions. Obviously, we need resources and information to get that to the officer. Mm-hmm. But you can do that very dryly, or you can mm-hmm. do that very, like, I'm truly interested in your call. And mm-hmm. as a secondary step, you have the time to be able to do that. Whereas in 911, mm-hmm. obviously, you have standards you have to hit. Yeah. But to make or break that scene. Because mm-hmm. when that officer is there, if you've escalated it, he's already at a deficit with that call.
Yeah, he's cussing the dispatcher out, but he's looking at the officer. You know what I mean? Like
Right. Because we've already ticked him off. Or we told him, oh, well, your situation's not important. And then they feel like even more so they need to prove their situation with the officer or something like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things I train with is this is our scene. The phone is our scene. It's like trying to tell someone how to do CPR. You're doing it, but your hand's off. And so it's the same thing of controlling that scene, just as if the officer was there, but we're having to do it hands off. So your skill set, your training, your seeking how to improve needs to be on point. Mm-hmm. You can't just be very lackadaisical with that because you play an important part in that.
Our ability to communicate is it's so high, right? Like it's so different than an officer who has the environment to play off of, you know, I'm eye contact, I'm looking at you, my body language can tell you if I give a shit or not, you know, like
right.
You have all those things in person that we don't have in in a phone call. It's kind of right. Like interpreting a text message. You know what I mean? Like the communication is a little, you have to work a little harder for it because you don't have that tone context. It's the same thing dealing with the phone call as a dispatcher. I don't have certain things that I would have in person, you know, to play off. I can't see a red flag. I'm only listening to you, what you're saying, what the background noise is. Can't see if you're grabbing for things. I can't see. All these are the things that folks who respond in the field can look for and be aware of and cognizant of. You know, sure. I could have a suicidal caller who's telling me they don't have any weapons and they can be holding a gun in their hand. You know,
right.
All I have is what they're giving me. And I have to work with that. Before we continue, we wanted to take a moment to thank our partners at Prepared. You can learn more about the awesome support and technology Prepared provides to first responders by heading to prepared911.com. Partners like Prepared help to continue our mission of supporting, empowering, and educating the heroes under the headset. You can learn more about our resources and partnerships by heading to theraspydispatcher.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and not being complacent. So in one of the early calls or two different things that I kind of remember, and it kind of feeds into that, is not being complacent and to learn your stuff. One of the questions that you had sent out to me was, you know, do you remember some of your first calls for service or earlier calls? And through 19 years, I've all kinds of different calls and whatever, but two situations in particular, early on at my first agency that I worked with, a sergeant said this to me and it stuck to me. They gave us 10 codes and whatever that we had to learn. But in one of the 10 codes was like a miscellaneous call, like just a general complaint where if you didn't have a whole lot of information or if you really couldn't figure it out or it
that
really
cover all call,
all encompassing.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're first training, there's a lot of information coming in, not just from a city side and trying to help the public with city stuff. It's about what kind of questions, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, like those kind of weapons, those kind of things, you know, to put in there and all these things. And you're trying to do all the information and you're just a baby dispatcher. And then you got to assign it a 10 code, you know, and so I had a new kid. I was in college. I didn't learn all of my 10 codes. I learned the primary ones that I needed to and which ones to give out as a 10 code and not give any information like a bus wreck or a sexual assault or juvenile kind of things. And so I gave this call and I was notorious for just a general complaint. And then I would give the information afterwards. So I'd give it out as a general complaint 10 code. And then I'd give out like all the details. And this sergeant came in after she hit a call and she said, learn your 10 codes. You're on the radio too much. If you would learn your 10 codes, you could alleviate a lot of that extra stuff at the end. Everything's not a general complaint. We have a 10 code for that. Get your head out of your butt. And learn 10 codes. And so it was, that sticks to me because learn your craft. Seek to improve it or to be precise in your craft. Now, there's too many variables and a lot of what we do is gray area, but seek to know your craft. Seek to learn what you need, the little fine-tuned things. Don't be complacent. And I know that over 19 years, you can become complacent in some things. And that another call that sticks out to me, those aha moments. If I'm rambling, tell me to stop talking.
No, my gosh, keep going.
I had a murder-suicide call one day. And But I had a caller who called every Monday at the same time. And she was a little signal 13, which is a little bit crazy and a little off. And she would call and she would ramble and just different. She was in a spiral, a downhill spiral, but it was every Monday at the same time she called. And so I became complacent to her, not just necessarily in my job and like any call could be something. I became complacent to her. So as soon as she called, I just wrote her off because she's just crazy. And one day she called and she was listing medications. She was telling about sticky notes on stuff. She was talking about that she had tried to hurt herself, but her blood was clotting. She tried to cut herself. And so, do you need rescue? No, I'm fine. You know, different things like that. Well, where's your husband? He's upstairs in the bed and different things like that. And she would hang up and then call back. And it was the same thing. And I'm like, she's just crazy. She's just spiraling, whatever. In the end, her husband was upstairs and she had killed him the night before. And she had tried to hurt herself, and she had clotted. And the sticky notes around in her house were because that's which child was supposed to get what item in her house. But I had written her off. And at the end, I got gigged. I got in trouble for just not. She ended up committing suicide on the back side of the front door while my officers were there trying to knock. With a gun. And so the outcome, would it have been different? No. Listening back on the call, a lot of those aha moments of where I had missed things because I had become complacent and I could have read between the lines. It wouldn't have changed the outcome. Her husband was already passed. She was already, you know, very determined to commit suicide. But what it would have changed was the gut punch to my officers on the other side of that door. And how my complacency and my she's crazy, what that did to my officer's mental state and how that might have changed. Like that's a drop in that trash can for them that's going to overflow one day. And so not becoming complacent and treating every call, even if it's the same person, with the same due diligence as we would any other one. And that really, those two things have really stuck at me. Learn your craft and don't become complacent, even if it's the same old person.
Yeah. This is so many things I have to say.
I'm sorry, ramble.
No, this is wonderful. Not every call we take is perfect. In 19 years in this job,
you're going to screw stuff up.
You're gonna screw stuff up, and being able to say I could have done better, and I learned from that, is something we all need to be able to do. Now, you don't have to necessarily always come on to the Let's Talk Dispatch podcast and tell that to the world, because some people don't want to share their mess ups.
Their dirty laundry,
But it's important for every dispatcher to hear that. I'm not gonna be perfect all the time. And I can learn from this, that, and even someone else's mistakes. And we all doing this job have that individual that calls wild all the time, who obviously struggles with their mental health, who, is calling because they know we are always going to pick up. We all have that caller. I mean, I know no dispatcher who could not relate to that feeling of, Jimmy's calling again,
again. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone has that thing. And it's true. We can easily go, okay, you good. You don't need okay, bye. Especially in busy centers where you're having to go through and answer call after call after call. But we do have to engage with every single caller, even the frequent flyers, because of the potential for any situation to escalate. And you never know. It's just one of those things that you just never know what's really going on. And when we talk about all I have is what you're giving me, you have to really be able to read between those lines, as you said, because sometimes it can really mean a whole nother thing. And sometimes you have to trust your little dispatcher gut that something's not right.
Right. Well, and as a trainer, that's been something that I've used because we've talked about it on, we see it on Facebook, on social media, different trainees talking about how their center's awful and their trainer is a butthole. Like just, you know, just really, we have to remember where we came from. And use those, and you're talking about, don't come on, let's talk dispatch and air all our dirty laundry. But if we don't share where we came from and use that to train the next dispatcher, or I read an article about something about punching bags, and it's about training your next best coworker. And as you know, CTOs, is where did I come from? When did I learn how to be precise in my craft, or to improve my craft every day, or to seek training? Or when did I have my aha moment and to say, you know, every call may be stupid. We work in these smaller agencies.
And that's true.
But all of a sudden, your chief of police gets shot in the gut. Like you know, things like that might happen, and you have to share those moments when you screwed up. And let's not, you know, yes, they're baby dispatchers and they don't know, you know, a hill of beans about anything to do with dispatching. But where do we come from back when we didn't know? And even after 19 years, you should strive to learn something new every day. And so sometimes you're going to mess up even after 19 years. And being transparent with each other, and not punishing the new dispatchers, the new trainees, because we are so good at what we do. Nobody's ever too good at what they do to not learn something or not share what they know. And then if you talk trash about your coworkers because they don't know how to do their job effectively, what part of that do you own? What did you not share of yourself or of your experience or knowledge?
Eating
our young. Why are we eating our young? That's all that falls on us, because we're not sharing what we know. So we all can be our best and be a better team for that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when we talk about complacency and just, you know, I think especially for folks who are like just getting out of training and are probably burnt out, I feel there's this really like fun moment when you no longer have someone like watching over your shoulder and critiquing every little thing that you're doing, because like I'll have a lot of people who are in training who are just like, I just feel so overwhelmed. Like I don't like there's always something that I need to improve. And it's like, that's how our training is just designed. You know, you just, you're always going to have something said that you could have done better on the call, on the dispatch, through your training, because they're supposed to be excessively nitpicky. That's just kind of the way the training's designed. Because in reality, if we always had someone sitting and listening to our calls, there would always be something we could have done better, right? Like just because you're off training, just because you're 19 years in, if someone listens to your call while you're doing it, they're gonna give you feedback. There's just no one's ever going to be 100% perfect on their call. So when trainees get off that training and there's this like really fun grace period that comes where you just get to sit, you get to breathe, you get to learn to do the job again, because you're finding your rhythm, you're finding your style, you're finding the way you like to ask things. Like there's just really fun time right after you get off training. But then you get to the point where you've been doing it so long where that complacency starts to sit in.
To start fresh.
Exactly. We have to be really self-aware of that and understand that I survived training and now I feel like, oh no, it could tell me nothing type of thing. But it's in reality, like every day we can learn to do better on our calls. You know, we should be seeking training. Our department should be making training available to us, for us, for dispatch specific, because a lot of times we can get lumped in with the officers and we just don't have the same reality.
It's not the same.
It's really not. You know, I think some things, like I was just talking to someone else about like CNT training, and how dispatchers don't necessarily get the same CMT training as officers. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be very beneficial personally for our dispatchers to be CMT trained as well. Mm-hmm. So that if we ever do get stuck on a call because we've built a rapport and they know, and they don't want to talk to the officer, which mm-hmm. has happened. I've had coworkers get stuck on calls because they don't want to talk to nobody else but the person they've been talking to.
Right.
And then the officer will come in and sit with them and, you know, instruct them and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if we're already trained in that same thing that we would pass it off to the officer, mm-hmm. it would just be so much more helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I did a training similar to that, hostage negotiations and critical incident stuff. And I went with several of my officers. And obviously for me, the training, only a portion of it really applied to me. And I had to, and center training officers, I think, need to do that kind of stuff to where they can take that information and interpret that for our industry and not necessarily law enforcement across the board to make it specific. And so for me, even after the training, I had to bring that back and interpret that to how it fit for the dispatch office. Mm-hmm. So even if you go in with some of your officers and stuff, don't shut it down. And just mm-hmm. because a lot of the training is geared for officer specific or first responder specific. Well, you're a first mm-hmm. responder now, babe. Get on mm-hmm. up in there and take up some of their training too. Mm-hmm. That's available. There's a Foley Forensics Conference that happens every year in our state. And mm-hmm. I've attended it multiple years. Mm-hmm. There's some great information. You know? And so even if it's geared for coroners or forensic officers or evidence techs or something like that, there's some information that we can glean from it and then interpret mm-hmm. that to what that means for us, to where mm-hmm. we can better serve the officers or the first responders who go out, which has a ripple effect for our community.
Mm-hmm.
That's my new one.
Yeah.
The officers to be more effective in what they do.
Yeah. And I think that oftentimes we can get caught up in like, this is geared for so-and-so and so-and-so. But like you said, we're not going to go in there and dump they're coming with a pitcher of water, even though I prefer beer. And you know, they start pouring and pouring and pouring. We're not expected to take that whole pitcher and put it into our cup. Mm-mm. You know, we just like, oh,
everybody, I
like
that. Around the table.
That, right?
Yeah, everybody around the table.
Yeah, you know, like, oh, I like that. Let me pour a little bit of that into my cup. Oh, I like that. Let me pour a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I'm only taking the things that resonate with me, resonate, and I can bring back to my department, and that would hold true, you know, to my line of work, the things that I'm going to do. So I think, like, for folks who listen to Let's Talk Dispatch, they're not going to listen to our episode and take every single thing away that mm-hmm. you and I said from this episode, but they're probably going to take one or two things and go, and you know, they're going to take that and they're going to share it with people and they're going to relate mm-hmm. to it. And they're going to, you know, oftentimes people leave comments like, you know, why are they, I feel exactly what they're feeling. And it's because we learn from each other so often just by communicating effectively, sharing our knowledge. And that I take at least one thing away from probably each episode or each interview that I do, because there's always a tool that I could add to my tool belt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk about being a mother and being a dispatcher. Because I have no knowledge on this. I don't plan to have any knowledge.
You're missing out. You're missing out on a great adventure. No.
I'm okay. I'm good. I'm going to leave that up to the real superheroes. Because let me tell you.
Superheroes that are spiraling out of control and have no idea what's going on in life. Superheroes.
But, you know, a lot of people do ask me, like, you know, what does this job look like for a parent, you know, for a starting family?
And
a mom.
Because it's a different world than some of our male dispatchers mm-hmm. for these moms. Yeah.
Yeah. And what would you say to folks who are, you know, moms and considering this line of work and, you know, what's feedback you'd give to them?
Oh, hey, battle rattle, man, you're going to need it. You're going to need it. Think outside the box. Delve into your community. One thing that really, so my husband was a patrol officer. And so we both were working shifts opposite each other, or a lot of times, the only thing that probably made it work was a lot of my time was part-time hours that, well, I was part-time status, but working full-time hours, or, and I'm a glutton for punishment, because there was a time when I was working night, evening swing shifts, homeschooling my children. And there's five of them. There's five of these children.
It's you outnumbered, baby.
I was outnumbered a long time ago. But you're going to be tired. You're going to be really tired. But it's, for me, we delved into our community. There was a time when my oldest son, we dropped him off with some friends to catch the bus, because my husband and I both worked night shift or day shift. And so speaking of children.
I was like, are you parenting right now?
I'm parenting, because I heard something.
I snapped to attention. I was like, wait, is that for me or for someone else?
No, it's that youngest one that was told not to come in here. The middle one said, don't go in mom's room. And then here he comes in. Anyway, we dropped the oldest one off with a friend who they were shift friends with us, but their kids caught the school bus, and so they put him on. There were times when I worked night shift, my husband worked day shift, and so I'd come home and put the kids on the school bus whenever he was in school, and then I'd go to sleep, and I would my oldest daughter was a baby at that time, and I was taking her to town to daycare and then realized she's a sleeper. She'll sleep late. I can take a nap, get up, and then feed her breakfast, and then put up barriers in the living room and sleep in the floor while she played around me. And then it was lunchtime and nap time, and then I could go to sleep. My husband was home before the bus got. Like, you just have to be creative sometimes. And it's hard, and you're tired. And hopefully you can speak with your administration to kind of help you get that shift worked around. The last 5 years, five years I was at my last agency as the chief communications officer. I worked day shift Monday through Friday, which was really, really sweet. Obviously, you know, day shift Monday through Friday, that's a sweet gig. But it took 19 years to get there. So you have to pay your dues.
Yeah, for real.
There really is no cut and dry answer for parenting while dispatching it, or even any kind of shift work. You know, nurses have to do it. Cops have to do it. But utilizing trusted shift mates, utilizing working something out with your partner. And if one of you has more seniority, monopolize on that to where you can, you just have to get creative and just sleep when you can and sleep when you can. It's like bringing home a new baby, sleep when they sleep. But staying consistent helps. Even if it's craziness, it's consistent craziness. So where you can get your body in some kind of new rhythm for sleep. Because, you know, with night shift, that's when a lot of it. One of the things that my husband and I tried to do was night shift. If you can't get a day shift, volunteer for that night shift that some people don't want. Because then you're sleeping while your kids are at school or at daycare. And then you're able to be parent in the evening time and do bedtime. And then go into your shift if you're on eights, which a lot of mine was eights or tens. And just think outside the box. There really is no just pull up your bootstraps and hang on, because that's and hope that, and then once they get old enough, so my kids' age range from 19 to six. Mm-hmm. And so once they get older and they've grown up in that atmosphere of dispatch, mm-hmm. the kids kind of, they start getting in there, and it doesn't fall as much on the parent. They're yeah. able to kind of pick up and fill in some of those gaps or babysit, or, mm-hmm. you know, some parents get stressed out when their 16-year-old starts driving. Not me. It was the best day in the world.
Hey, go!
Because I'm going to need somebody to pick up this kid from practice. I'm going to need somebody to pick up. Yes. And one thing that we did too was, because we do have so many kids, mm-hmm. is everybody doesn't play a sport all at the same time. Because we want to be available to support that sibling. Mm-hmm. And so if I have a kid who plays basketball, and I have a kid, when I do, I have a kid who plays basketball, I have a kid who play, three kids that play soccer, mm-hmm. and now I band, is everybody can't do extracurricular at the same time. Mm-hmm. That way we're available to relay back and forth for practice. We're not so overwhelmed, and we're actually able to be at home and eat dinner when we can. Yeah. And we support each other. And yeah. so whatever one sibling's doing, everybody's not running around like crazy to where the parents aren't there. Mm-hmm. The siblings aren't there to support mm-hmm. or cheer them on. So that was just a rule that we kind of set down too, is we just can't do all the things. We have yeah. to pick and choose and support what we can. Mm-hmm. And that seems to work out well.
Yeah, no, that's a great advice. And I mean, I think it kind of all goes back to, you know, building community. And in this line of work, especially when you're just getting started, building community, finding community is so important to help you be successful, whether it's to managing your home life with, you know, your kids and your partner, or managing your training so you don't go crazy, and yeah. you know, managing your mental health, talk to somebody who gets it, you know, building yeah. community goes such a long way in this line of work.
It really does.
Yeah. And especially it sounds like with having kids, five kids, Kim.
Ooh, I know. And the crazy thing is we work shift work opposite each other.
What has happened?
I have no idea.
I had to tell my brother, they have three kids. I said, look, every time you guys pop a new one out, my inheritance goes down. So we're tapped at three. We can't. No, you can't. We're not writing no more into the will. So we're done with three.
Done with three. Well, hey, the third one's the hardest one to bring home. After that, it's breezy.
Oh my God. I think there was a study that said after three kids is just like two or something like that.
It as is. Far as it like really money is.
And time. And it's just after three, it's just everything's the same.
Now, I haven't read that study, but I've experienced that. My mother-in-law told me that years ago because she had five. And she said, you know, the third one was the hardest one to bring home after, because then you're officially outnumbered. You can't tag team with three.
Yeah.
But then after that, they start to pair up, which can be good or it can be bad, because they pair up and fight, or they pair up and they work against you because they're buddies then, but they have that evil laugh in their friendship. So
yeah. That's amazing.
It's definitely been an adventure. My kids have grown up at the police department. Mm-hmm. My oldest has run up and down the hallway writing tickets to people on a notepad. We have baby monitors have been handheld radios, and we've dispatched each other. We have a rolling patrol car through here. The youngest one rides on, and we'll loudspeaker. Like, we, law enforcement and has been our life, which is good if it's not competing against the normal life.
Yeah.
Crazy when, you know, when the kids get in trouble, you're sitting at the dinner table and it's like a court session. Dad's the judge, and then one kid's a character witness, and one's a witness, and then like that's the craziness that is the Fuller household.
Yeah.
he suspects something and we can't prove it, dinner time becomes a court session.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Then one of them says, I need to be a character witness. I don't think they would do something like that. Or we're very strange. Very strange.
I think it's wonderful.
My kids are exposed and aware of way more than they probably should be.
Well, we have got some amazing advice for this episode. And the one thing that I ask everybody at the closing of our episode is, what advice would you give someone who is considering a career as a dispatcher?
Do it. Try it. Dispatch is not for everybody. Mm-hmm. Officers have tried to do dispatch and they suck at it. people have tried to do dispatch and I didn't get into it to be a dispatcher. Like, I don't know why I got into it, mm-hmm. but your why changes. Mm-hmm. And so even if you're thinking about it just because you need a paycheck, mm-hmm. if you go in it to learn something, to better yourself, your why will change. Mm-hmm. And you may decide that it's not for you, and that's okay. The time that you were there, you made a difference while you were there. Mm. If it's something that you realize is not for you, or, you know, burnout and passion fatigue happens, mm-hmm. it's okay to move on, because while you were there, you made a difference. You know, you can't save them all, but you can save that one. And mm-hmm. hey, keeping that in mind, I think that's important. And when you do become a dispatcher, own your position. Mm-hmm. You have a authority even within this peer set. No, we don't put on a vest and go get shot at. And no, we don't have to train in firearms and whatever. But the training that we have is just as valuable, just as worthy as the training that the officers have, because we're paving that way for them to be effective in what they do. And so owning it. So if you're thinking about it, go for it. Even if you don't know your why, it's like going to college. You don't know what you want to do at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to go. You feel called to go and mm-hmm. give it a try. You'll be better for it in the end, whether you stay there for 19, 20, 30 years, or if you stay there for 2 or 3, mm-hmm. you'll be better for it in the end, I think.
Awesome. It's so true. We need more dispatchers. And if you're only there for a short stint, it's every call you take is appreciated. Let me tell you.
And you gave us a little bit of relief while you were there, because the world needs more dispatchers.
Help. I know, right? Please apply.
Yes.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for being willing to jump on with me and chat about all the things. Like I said, I've learned so much, and I know
I hope it was valuable.
You truly, I know folks are going to really resonate with a lot of the things that you shared in your vulnerability, and I know that's tough, so I do really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you. I'm proud of you. I don't know you from Adam's House Cat other than watching you on these podcasts mm-hmm. and different things that you put out there, but I'm proud of you that you have created a space mm-hmm. for just plain old everyday dispatchers mm-hmm. to come and give a piece of themselves or their experience. And it really, it helps validate our position. It helps validate what we do. No, I'm not a dispatcher that's gone on to, you know, Rapid SOS or some of these big things. And no, I haven't, you know, worked all these big, huge calls, and I don't work for a giant center, but mm-hmm. you create a space where secondary PSAP dispatchers can come and share some of their experience that, hey, we're out there mm-hmm. and we have something to say, and no, we're not 911 and, you know, 911 were, you know, your primaries, mm-hmm. but you've created a space where everybody can feel like their experience is valuable, is worthy, and what they have to say can be useful. And dude, I'm proud of you. You're doing great things. I'm sure your mama told you that and whatever, but I'm proud of you. You're doing great.
Thank you. You know, sometimes
people like me who feel like I'm not a real dispatcher because I don't work in a 911 district, or you know, I have all this training for exposure, but you know, I don't have all, I've got experience that I don't think I have, but still it's been great for my healing in my sabbaticalness right now. So I appreciate you.
Thank you. You know, it really is, it's eye-opening for me too, you know, to be able to talk to folks and learn, you know, what secondary PSAPs are dealing with, and really open that door for folks to know that, and maybe people don't want to work 911 and they do want, but they still want to help people. Like, there's so many different ways to do this job, to be in this field. And just the fact that you and so many other people are willing to come talk to me, you know, and share their stories and be vulnerable. And I'm honored, you know, and I really do appreciate your kind words. And, you know, some days with all these folks out here in the social media world, you know, sometimes I get beat up a little bit, you know.
Tell them to find the bridge and jump, because we don't want to.
But, you know, it's always more positive than negative. And so I, you know, hearing you say things like that, it fills my bucket. So I do appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
All right, Kim, I'll be right back with you.
All right.
All right, everybody, that was another amazing episode here on Let's Talk Dispatch. Kim, thank you again for being willing to come out and chat with me. Like I said, it really is a honor to be able to create this space for you folks and connect with you virtually and on the social medias. And, you know, it's always really interesting getting to meet so many different people from so many different spaces, walks of life, careers, et cetera, who do this job. And I really am privileged to have the front row seat to all of these stories and learning moments. So thank you all for all you do, for listening, tuning in, subscribing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. If you are interested in being a guest on the Let's Talk Dispatch podcast, you can do so by going to the raspydispatcher.com. You can also submit a story. If you're not down for the virtual meet and greet with me, I'm always willing to hear stories that you can submit as anonymously as you would like to be on our website as well. Just go to podcast, submit your story, and I will share that on a mini-sode. Until next time, everybody, stay raspy. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let's Talk Dispatch, a Raspy Dispatcher production. If you like the podcast, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, leave a 5-star review, and of course, tell a friend. If you want to be a guest, head to the raspydispatcher.com and check out our additional resources. Until next time, stay raspy, everybody.